You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this September 24th, 2025. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. Across from me is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us here on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7. You got us for the next couple of hours. And nice day out in Auburn, hotter than we want it to be, but I think we're going to say that until January. So we just got to accept it and move on. There's a ton going on around the sports world, especially with Auburn. Football news, basketball news, injury news. We flip to what's coming up this weekend in college football in Auburn, about Auburn, and around the SEC and beyond. And so lots going on that we're going to talk about on today's show. But happy Wednesday, Christian. How are you, sir?
Happy Wednesday. Doing well. What a morning it was over at the sports complex as we got to be a part of the crowd watching Stephen Pearl give his inaugural speech for being Auburn's new basketball head coach. John Cone was there and was able to speak before him and got to hear everything that Stephen Pearl had to say and had to talk about. And we're going to break down a whole lot of that. We're going to dive into some of the quotes that stood out to us, some of our overall thoughts and comments regarding the press conference and how we both think everything that was needed to be said was said. And we both think that it was an A-plus speech, an A-plus kind of talk in an opening ceremony for Auburn basketball and the future. You mentioned we begin to flip the page to Texas A&M now. We have our brief little breakdown. It'll be a little bit more of a deeper dive tomorrow. Usually it's Wednesday, but man, so much news that we have to show. It'll be much more of a dive into Texas A&M kind of today as we go, and then a lot tomorrow because Auburn football continues to have breaking news. And man, what a weekend we have in front of us in college football.
Yeah, so we got two wonderful guests on the show today as well. Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. We'll have our man Daryl Dapperich for Double D Wednesday. He'll join us from Locked On Auburn in the Barn coming up in hour number two. And so before, after, around our guests that we have on the show today, you can be a part of the show if you would like to. Give us a call right now, 334-321-1390. Again, that number, 334-321-1390. The phone lines are open to start today's show. If you have thoughts on Auburn getting out of the Oklahoma game, if you have thoughts on Auburn going into the Texas A&M game, or maybe you have some thoughts on Auburn basketball. Did you listen to head coach Stephen Pearl's press conference this morning? Were you impressed? Were you not impressed? Is there something that maybe had you excited or concerned about what the future of Auburn basketball is going to look like? Any of that or anything else you'd like to talk about, we can do so with you right now. 334-321-1390, or you could shoot us a text in the On the Line text box at 334-784-1067. And that's where we begin today's show, is with Stephen Pearl, who is now officially the new head coach of Auburn men's basketball. And it's easy if you just say, yeah, Coach Pearl. Coach Pearl is the head coach of Auburn basketball. Coach Pearl. But when you start saying SP instead of BP or Steven instead of Bruce, right? I'm just now thinking about that. That's something that I will miss, is when Bruce gets introduced at Neville Arena, or I should say when Bruce got introduced at Neville Arena, was all the fans and especially the students who would Bruce. But they're gonna have to come up with something new.
You don't
now
think
for Steven.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Yeah, I don't know, son. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, they're gonna have to come up
new.
With something new. Yeah, there yeah. I don't know. Younger. I don't know. They'll have to find something for Steven. That just hit me. Literally, as I was sitting here talking, I was like, oh. We're not going to hear that anymore. So
bring back like the Jock Peterson, the pearl necklaces for the Braves game with Locktober a couple years ago. Just start rocking those for the pearls.
Something. So, I think Steven did a really good job today. We're going to get to the phone lines here in just a moment. But I think Steven did really well today in his introductory press conference. He looked sharp, had his whole staff there, had most of the team there. His family was there. John Cohen was there. A lot of the board members were there. I mean, there was a lot of folks over there this morning at the Football Performance Center in the media room. And, look, I think Steven is going to be a good coach and one that Auburn seemingly felt confident in to take over the reins for his father. So
let's get to the phone lines. 334-321-1390. And, Daniel, you're on the line. First caller of the afternoon. How's your Tuesday afternoon going? Or Wednesday afternoon, rather. Daniel, we got you?
Maybe not.
Well?
All right. Well, if he wants to
well,
call
Daniel,
back
if you can hear
again,
us, call back. Yeah.
Yeah. Your thoughts on what Steven had to say earlier this morning at his introductory press conference?
Again, I think everything that needed to be said was said. And although we see that and the national media sees it as it's no longer Bruce Pearl, it's Steven Pearl. He talked a lot about how he doesn't want this moment, as big as it is, to simply be about him. There's so much more that went into that. I mean, you talk about all of the assistant staff members that got big-time promotions, whether that's becoming new assistant head coaches, whether that's becoming kind of the official and unofficial offensive and defensive coordinators, or now the associates, and all of those different types of promotions. Congrats to everybody on that side, and how many times did he count and compliment and thank his staff, saying that they're the best in the country, saying that, yes, he's now the face, but there's so much more that goes into it. I was always really impressed as well about Steven and the way that he went about his business, and he talked a little bit about that here today of asking, why is he ready? Why does it feel like this is the right time? And I feel like he answered it really, really well by saying Bruce gave all of their staff members really big roles and allowed them to do a lot more than just what their title said or what their title showed. And so he feels like he's kind of taken on some of those responsibilities that he needed to as a head coach, even while Bruce Pearl was still there. And I think he's going to kind of run the ship, at least according to how Bruce did in year one. I think in year one to year two, there could be a little bit of changes. But no, I loved everything that was said. You feel like he won the media over in that press conference.
Yeah, and I'm curious on what the fans thought, if they were able to go back and watch or listen, or if you watched it live or whatever the case may be. The appearance, right, of Steven Pearl as the new head coach of Auburn men's basketball. And I'm not saying you got to take it and run, and that means he's going to win 18 national titles and be the greatest coach of all time. I'm just saying it's not easy to step up there and do what he did today. And he got emotional several times this morning, talking about his dad, talking about Auburn, talking about his family, talking about his team. I mean, he got emotional several times, and that spoke a lot to me, just the fact that you could tell how much he cares about this. And I do think, though, that it's a fair question for the media, for the fans, for opponents, for pundits, if you will, to ask that question of, are you ready? Why are you ready? Why do you feel you deserve this? Why are you worthy? And I hate to use it in that connotation, but it is what it is. Why are you worthy of being the next head men's basketball coach at Auburn as a guy that's never been a head coach? Right, the story everybody knows, and everybody seemed to be kind of in the same ideology here about the worst kept secret in Auburn basketball the last 3 years was Bruce was going to hang it up and Steven Pearl was the next in line. That's not really a surprise to anybody, but everybody seemed to be that I talked to was in the same boat of, well, maybe Steven will go be a coach somewhere and then he'll come back. And not that anybody wanted Steven to leave. It was more so of, hey, go get some experience. Go be a head coach. Go coach at San Francisco or UAB or just some school and program smaller than Auburn and go learn how to be a head coach, because it is different than being an assistant, no matter how big that role is. Seemed like everybody was in that situation. That obviously didn't happen, and now he gets to learn on the fly as the new head coach of Auburn.
And I think that was where he went back to that answer of, I could have gone other places. I had legitimate conversations,
and I believe that,
with Bruce and with the staff of, do I go and take another job? And he said, cut my teeth and learn at a smaller place. And that was when it went back to the, however, our staff runs things differently than a head coach that sits himself three tiers above everybody else and kind of just barks down commands for the rest of the team. I mean, again, he credited so many different guys. He said, there's so many thank yous, so bear with me. And he took his time, as he should, talking about all of these guys in particular, naming just about every single player or every single coach on the staff, and just thanking them for sticking together, sticking through the years, saying that it's probably not going to be very long until other guys get some pretty big opportunities, but for them to be able to stick at Auburn with Steven now one more year, again, him having those responsibilities while not having that title of head coach, you feel like benefits him because he's not completely stepping into a new role that he has absolutely no quote-unquote experience in.
Yeah, and I think to reiterate that, the staff staying is so big here. It really, really is. I mean, his staff is he said it, what, 3, 4, 5 times in the press where it's the best in the country?
There was even a couple times of, where does your confidence come from as a coach? And he literally answered by pointing over at the guys that were standing up at the wall.
Yeah, and I think that cannot be understated here. And so you kind of look at it now, it's like, okay, what next, right? He's Bruce is done. Bruce is retired. Bruce isn't taking another job. He's not going to go coach somewhere else. He wasn't poached by a bigger program, which there aren't many that are, but he wasn't poached by somebody. He's not going into politics, at least for now.
And that was another big thing, not the politics side of things, but Cohen kind of emphasized it a couple times. It was Bruce's decision to step down. Right, not that we ever expected Bruce to get fired or anything like that, but the national media has done so much of trying to make it seem as if Auburn was trying to get him out, and that is by no means the case whatsoever.
Right, and so, yeah, there's a couple of people that have just made complete fools of themselves because they don't know any other. They don't know any different than just to be idiots on the internet and look for a clip or two. But, yes, this was a retirement by Bruce Pearl. You don't announce that you're staying in Auburn and get a job with the university and debunk the rumors of you running for political office if you're taking another job somewhere else. That's not happening here. Bruce is done. Bruce is retired from coaching basketball. And now you look forward to Steven Pearl as the head coach and what he brings as the head man. He's still your defensive guy. That's where he shines. That's where he lives, okay? And he claimed that he's going to run it very similarly to what Bruce Pearl has done. And he even admitted, he said, look, it would be idiotic for me to step in and make major changes of a program coming off of a Final Four appearance. And I think he's right about that. And something you and I talked about, and I think you mentioned it a little bit earlier, was maybe year two and beyond, you'll start to see some of those changes just because one person runs it differently than the other, even if it is a father and son type of thing. And so I expect with this team for now to continue to build and see those expectations grow a little bit. But you are wondering if this team is going to stay together, right? Because technically the transfer portal is open. And I appreciated and respected Steven several times saying, hey, let's address this really quick. He talked about NIL, and he talked about the transfer portal. He admitted that without NIL, without the work that Auburn had done on the backside to be a top five team in the SEC and NIL revenue, he said, we wouldn't have been able to afford this team. And that's the truth. I mean, it is what it is. That's the language we're allowed to use now. Auburn's NIL work in basketball would not have been able to buy the team that they have right now. Sure, those guys wanted to come to Auburn and coach and play for the Pearls and things like that. But at the end of the day, they got paid, okay? He also addressed the elephant in the room about the transfer portal. And he said the response has been very positive since Bruce Pearl made his retirement announcement.
and Stephen was announced head coach. He told a couple of stories about some guys that said they were with him. We want to play for you. We love you. You're our guy. He talked about how so far they've had good practices and they'll get back to it tomorrow.
And that everybody was at practice yesterday.
But that option still remains. You still have 28 days from right now.
Yeah.
That somebody, if they change their mind, if they get a call, if they get an offer, that they can leave and explore that. And Steven said, if somebody wants to do that, we will support them 100%.
And it's frustrating to hear because you feel like there was so much stress already from the NBA draft waters and to Todd Pettiford. He's obviously the unspoken name that everybody is halfway worried about right now. If worried is the word or the adjective that you choose to use, there's been so many people that have gone and done their research already. I mean, we were looking at it a little bit. We didn't dive into it as much as other people, but looking at the players that were there at the press conference
Todd wasn't there.
Keyshawn Hall wasn't there. Murphy was there. But after, there's been plenty of people, I think it was Hokanson that tweeted out and said, guys, some of these kids legitimately did have class. So do not dive into that
class?
As much as...
What is that?
Online studies of...
Art,
correct, yes. He said do not dive into everything. Don't put on your investigative glasses because of one or two or three guys that were not able to make it to the press conference. They said that as of now, there haven't been open conversations with anybody as of right now. Talked about the information not being released the way that the Pearls were hoping. Obviously, with the way that social media works, as soon as one person reports it, it goes absolutely nuclear. And 3 minutes later, there was an ESPN notification that I got on my phone that kind of released it. And so obviously the players heard about it that way before everything else, before they were planning on having a big meeting prior to practice. And so they said that the room was very heavy when that news was dropped, that Steven was going to be the new head coach. But yeah, like you mentioned, he said he walked out and Steven began to kind of break down in tears, just also with the reality of it, but then also just because of how heavy the room was, and said that, yeah, three or four guys walked up to him and gave him a hug, told him they loved him, and he pointed that out and said, you guys don't know how much I needed that in that moment. And so everything right now is in good spirits. You hope, and right now, 28 days from now, you hope that you hear absolutely nothing about Auburn basketball.
And you have exhibitions coming up. You've got your regular season opener coming up in just over a month, about 5 or 6 weeks from now. And so Auburn is in a new era with Stephen Pearl as the new head coach of Auburn men's basketball. There's a lot more to discuss on that as we get closer to time, but we'll take our first break here in hour number one because more injury news on the football side as Auburn has to replace a receiver. We talk about that coming up next here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we continue on here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. And Hugh Freeze had his weekly SEC teleconference earlier today. And he broke some news to the Auburn fan base, the Auburn media, and just everybody in college football. It's the idea that Auburn has another injury, man. It's another injury on the offensive side of the football. We know that Auburn has been not the healthiest on that side. A couple of offensive linemen dinged up. You've had, of course, some running back rotation in there. And now you've got some receiver problems you got to deal with. As Horatio Fields reported by Hugh Freeze himself, he let everybody know today that Horatio Fields... same initials. How about that? Horatio Fields broke his foot yesterday in practice. It does require surgery, and he's going to be out for an indefinite amount of time. And so a starting receiver for Auburn, 12 catches, 106 yards on the year. He's got a touchdown as well. One of your third starting receiver, the Wake Forest transfer, somebody who was in the starting rotation because of his experience, because of his leadership, because of his outspoken mentality that Hugh Freeze has talked so much about. Horatio Fields with a broken foot, and he's out indefinitely.
Yeah, they kind of talked about he was the underrated leader of this team. He kind of took on that father figure role, kind of like Keandre Lambert-Smith did last year, of just trying to teach these younger guys after having that been there, done that mentality at Wake Forest. But yeah, now he's going to be able to, or going to have to, miss some time. And so it obviously brings up the question of, well, who's next? And Hugh Freeze right after that followed up by saying it's Perry Thompson. Perry Thompson is going to see the field. It's his now. It's his show now, and he's going to have to go out and prove why he belongs in this receiver room and why he belongs on the field.
And so there's a lot of Auburn fans now that are getting their wish of Perry Thompson being in that starting rotation. And look, I don't think there's been ever, if with me, I've never had any questions about if Perry Thompson is good enough to be a starting wide receiver in the SEC, right? I've never had that come across my mind. I've never seen that. I've never been told that from the inside. I mean, that's never been a concern. But I do want to bring up the idea that there is a reason Perry Thompson has not already been starting, right? And not saying there's one definite reason of, well, he didn't do this, so he's not starting. I'm not saying that. I'm saying there are reasons why someone starts over somebody else. And yes, Horatio Fields has starting experience. He has P4 experience at Wake Forest. And as we've talked about and as Hugh Freeze has told us, he has that leadership quality that you need on the offensive side of the football. But whatever those reasons are for Perry Thompson, whether it's route running, whether it's effort, whether it's mentality, whether it's just catching it when we throw it to you, right? Whatever those reasonings are, you got to get rid of them right now. You got to overcome them right now. You've got to solve them right now. Because I promise, Auburn's throwing the football his way this Saturday at Texas A&M. You're going to have to. You will rely on Cam Coleman, Eric Singleton, Malcolm Simmons, and Perry Thompson. Those guys have to make plays for you. And whatever your issues are, whatever your problems are, whatever the things that's holding you back, especially if you're Perry Thompson, it's got to go right now.
Well, that and even more so this weekend, because A&M obviously hears that information, and they know that Horatio Fields is a little bit more polished at that receiver spot. And going back to Horatio, since he's only played in 4 games, you're hoping that he can get that medical red shirt, which would be really, really nice, because again, you can play 4 games and then still redshirt, and medical obviously helps that even more, but that's obviously a conversation for another time as you're just now finding out about that news. But now, if you have those 4 receivers on the field all at one time, you have Cam, you have Eric, and you have Malcolm, and then you have Perry, I know which 3 A&M secondary is going to put more focus on, just because of what you see with the offense, of how they prioritize getting the ball to those 3 a little bit more, which makes it to where that could benefit Perry Thompson even more. Because if he's able to win one-on-one battles, again, he's 6'3", 220. We've talked about how he has all of the tools to be probably the most complete receiver on the team, from the standpoint of physicality, from the standpoint of speed, from the standpoint of verticality and everything like that. Now you just have to go out and be able to show that you can do it on Saturdays.
And you're just going to have to, man. You really, really do. When you look at the first availability report for Auburn this week that came out, or it's going to come out on tonight, I think. I think it comes out tonight. You expect Connor Liu to kind of be around there. Again, he got banged up in the Oklahoma game. I think he'll be fine, but he did get banged up in that game. Jeremiah Cobb, I heard he had a hip thing going on. You're still looking at Amaris Williams on the defensive side and Jay Crawford.
Freeze did say, though, he'd be surprised if Amaris does not play.
Okay, I missed that part. So that's huge on the defensive side.
I believe
side
that was said yesterday, or on Monday's reports.
Okay, well, that would be really nice then. But, of course, Horatio will be on it, and will be on it for a significant amount of time.
And then Connor Liu, they said, should be good to go, but he'll be playing through a sprained MCL, and so that will obviously affect him and the offensive line a little bit. But we didn't talk about this on Saturday, but major shout out to Cale Ellis.
Yeah, he played really well.
The 17-year-old. Now Auburn has one of those. So
can you believe he's taking
on that?
He should
Alabama.
Still be in high school, yeah, Christian.
Honestly, he has recess to still get to. I don't know. It might be sixth period. He's probably out there playing football right now, actually.
He had to get approval from his mom. He had to get a signed letter.
He did. He had to sign the not a waiver. What's the signature slip? Or the permission slip. That's what it is for the class field trip to go to Norman and hopefully to A&M. But, no, looked really, really well and did not allow a pressure when he was in there as that backup center. And so shout out to him. At least there's a little bit more confidence building in that second deep behind Connor Liu.
Can the whole offensive line say that they didn't allow a pressure on Saturday?
I don't think so.
Talk about getting things figured out. You got to get that fixed. Half of it's on the O-line. The other half's on Jackson Arnold. And I'll say this, too, as we're getting a break. Jackson Arnold's going to have to trust his receivers. We talked about that on Monday. Perry Thompson is a what? He's a 50-50 guy. He's a go-ball. He getter. He is a guy that wants it thrown up high and wants to go make a play. That's what Perry Thompson is. So, if you do that, you give yourself a chance. But if you don't throw him the ball, he can't ever catch it. So, I'll say that as we get to break. We got some insights yesterday with Alabama and Georgia from the Crimson Tide perspective, but why don't we talk a little bit about the Dogs, one of the biggest games coming up this weekend in college football. We talk with our man Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 next.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. We appreciate you being with us. And we welcome in our usual Wednesday guest at 2:30 in the afternoons here on ESPN. And we love having this guy a part of our show, and we're always grateful for him and his time. He covers the Georgia Bulldogs better than anybody, writing for Dogs 247. He is Jordan Hill with us on the phone lines now. My man, I'm sure the buzz is going crazy right now in Athens as fans are gearing up for a big-time showdown on Saturday night.
Yeah, I guess you guys want to talk about Georgia-Alabama. I thought we were going to spend about 15, 20 minutes breaking down the first preseason practice for Georgia basketball. But no, we'll save that for another day. And no, outstanding atmosphere getting ready. Top 20 matchup in Sanford Stadium. I know everybody's excited and ready to dive into it with you guys.
Well, I know we might not be talking about Georgia's first basketball practice, but I know that with Auburn's new head coach, Stephen Pearl, I know you were able to cover Bruce Pearl with your time here. And so what do you have to remember with Bruce Pearl and now in this new era with Stephen?
Yeah, it was fun getting to cover Bruce Pearl. I think, if I remember right, that would have been the 2021 season that I was on the basketball beat. And you couldn't ask for any more as a beat writer from Bruce. Fantastic to work with. I know I can sit here and say I know a lot more about basketball now compared to back then, but he was always very gracious, even if I asked not the best questions. But hated to see Bruce retire, but I wish him well. And I think that Stephen's ready to take this thing over. Saw a little bit of his press conference today. I think he's going to do a good job. And if you're an Auburn fan listening to this, I think you should be excited. Obviously, Bruce walking away is sad. And, I mean, that's the best basketball coach Auburn's ever had, one of the best in SEC history. But I have no doubt Stephen's ready to get it going, and I think he'll do well going forward.
On a real note for Georgia, I think their team's going to be talented this year. I mean, I think Mike White continues to do a great job, and I think this – where would you put this Georgia basketball team before we do get to football and the game coming up this weekend? Where would you put this Georgia team in terms of talent that we could see on the hardwood this year, at least during your time in Athens?
I'd say it's probably the second most talented one compared to last year's. And the thing that I'm fascinated with this team is how they replace their two big losses, Asa Newell, who's now with the Atlanta Hawks, a first-round pick, and then Silas Demery Jr., one of their leading scorers, who is now at UConn. So I know from talking to Mike White and some of the folks around the program, they're excited about this team. Mike told us last week he feels like this team will be a better shooting team than last year's team. There were stretches with that team where it was just very hard for them to get a bucket, but they played great on defense and a lot of times overcame that. So if they can find that two or three different consistent scorers I think they'll be in pretty good shape. They expect to play at a faster tempo. I think it's going to be a talented team, but if you go look at their SEC slate, it is super difficult, which is no surprise. So very talented team, but I think it's one that's going to have to fight and claw to be in that tournament hunt by the time we're getting to March.
We're talking with Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 here on ESPN 106.7. And last time we talked to you, the Georgia Bulldogs were coming off an emotional comeback win against the Tennessee Volunteers in Knoxville, one that people picked Georgia to win before, and by about the first end of the first quarter, nobody had them winning, and they come back and get it done. And then they went into a bye week, and so now they get ready for the Alabama Crimson Tide. What can you tell us about what's been going on around Athens the last couple of weeks, coming off that big emotional win, but really trying to get ready for the Crimson Tide?
Yeah, I think it's usually cliche to say that the bye week was well-timed, but I do think it helped, one, with this big game coming up. Again, this is the first time Alabama's playing in Athens since 2015, that's 10 years. But to get a lot of guys at least healthier, I don't know that any of the guys who have been banged up are quite 100%, but the right side of the offensive line has been a big question mark. And having a week without a game, I think, has been really big for right guard Juan Gaston, right tackle Ernest Green, running back Dwight Phillips Jr., probably in the best shape of those guys. When we talked to Kirby Smart on Tuesday, he said there's really been no limitations for the running back. So I think that the bye week was good as far as getting a chance to focus on some fundamentals. I know from talking to Kirby that he really likes how the secondary responded because they were, they were kind of on their heels against Tennessee. They gave up a lot more explosive plays than we're used to seeing, but he sounded really pleased with what they've shown in practice since then. And, just based on the start of this week, it seems like the team has really brought it in practice. They always are talking about how important it is to bring the energy, bring the juice to practice. And thought Oscar Delp said it well last night, the tight end. We had a chance to talk to him. He said, at Georgia, our games are won on Tuesdays and Wednesdays and Thursdays by how we practice. From what we've heard, they've really, done a good job of bringing the energy this week. And the goal now is just to carry that over these next couple days and then get ready for it on Saturday night.
When this matchup was announced, right, Alabama at Georgia in Athens, everybody was excited and expected this to be a top 10 matchup. But then the night game became official, and it just ramped up the anticipation even more. Alabama, of course, ranked 17th in the AP poll. Georgia ranked at 5. But, Jordan, rarely do you see a big-time matchup like this early in the season where both teams are coming off a bye week. Georgia coming off a bye, and so is Alabama. I mean, you expect both of these teams to have pretty much full focus and as healthy as they can be and be ready to go, don't you think?
Yeah, for sure. And on Monday, Kirby Smart was asked about the value of the bye week, and he quickly pointed out, well, Alabama had one too, so it kind of evens out. But no, I think more than anything, I think those bye weeks, I mean, obviously help these teams get a little bit healthier, but it only builds the anticipation. And I think that, truthfully, I think there's a lot of pressure on Alabama coming into this game. Now, obviously, they've had Georgia's number. Georgia's only beat them once in the last 10 meetings. But, I think a lot of people were quick to write off Alabama after week one. Now, I don't think that was necessarily fair. I think that Florida State team is tremendously better than it was a year ago. But I think Alabama comes into this game with something to prove. So I think that's probably been part of the conversation around Tuscaloosa, during that bye week and getting ready for this game now. I think that, Alabama has sort of set the expectation against Georgia. They are used to playing Georgia and they're used to coming out on top. And, you look at the last time these two teams played in the 2023 SEC title game, when they played in Atlanta, Alabama snapped a very long SEC winning streak for Georgia. And if they were to win on Saturday night, that would snap a 33-game home winning streak for Georgia. So I think there's motivation on Alabama's side, but obviously Georgia does not want to let the fans down in Sanford Stadium. Goes back to, I think that's October 2019, the last time Georgia lost at home. And they got to bring their A game, but I think they're going to take this one very seriously, try to lean on those fans as well to try to get the atmosphere and the environment as hard as it can be for Alabama and try to find a way to win this game.
Jordan, correct me if I'm wrong, but I know Georgia, or at least I think Georgia, was one of the worst in rushing offense per game last year and only averaged 3.6 yards per carry against Tennessee, yet you see Gunnar Stockton answer every single question mark you have around his name, going 23 of 31, 304 yards, two touchdowns, and doesn't turn the ball over. So where does the confidence lie with Georgia, where you don't feel like you have as much success running the football that you were trying to improve on from last year, but you feel like Gunnar Stockton continues to make steps in the right direction?
I think the one thing I would point out with the run game is they kind of, I wouldn't say they totally had to abandon it against Tennessee, but they got put in a position where they had to throw probably even more than they wanted to.
Sure.
You know, Georgia fell behind 21-7 late in that first quarter, so I think that was a piece of the puzzle. But no, I think that they feel really good about Gunnar Stockton, the way he played, the plays he made. I think the key now is to carry that into this game and to not try to do too much. And I'm sure that's been part of the conversation, you know, that Gunnar doesn't have to go out there and throw a 60-yard touchdown and make all these plays. It's just being consistent and taking what the Alabama defense gives him over the course of the game. And the thing I'm really interested in is just to see how much Georgia is willing to let him run by design. I mean, you look at that Florida State game, Thomas Cassianos, I mean, you know, Alabama just didn't have an answer for him. And it felt like, especially, you know, if they got in that third and medium, third and three, third and fours, you know, Thomas would take off running and they just could not stop him getting to the line, you know, past the line to gain. I don't know that you're going to see Gunnar run a ton, and I'm not saying that he's Thomas Cassianos, but he does have that ability to move. Does Georgia try to you know, really test the Alabama defense when it comes to containing the quarterback? Are we going to see a little bit of read option? Are you going to see maybe a quarterback draw or two, allowing him to make some plays in the RPO game? I think they understand that he's got that ability. I don't think you're going to see him, you know, run for 100 yards in this game, but I think there will be timely opportunities for Mike Bobo to dial that up and let Gunnar make plays with his legs, just as we've seen him do with his arm.
We're talking with Jordan Hill of Dogs 24/7 here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. And Jordan, you may have answered it a little bit with that last the last couple of sentences, but it's one of my favorite questions that I love asking with guys that cover teams other than Auburn, and now this being one of those games where Auburn's not involved at all. Where do you see Georgia trying to exploit Alabama, whether offensively or defensively? And since you cover Georgia so well, maybe a spot that you could see Alabama try and exploit Georgia offensively or defensively?
Well, the thing I'm really interested in when we get to Saturday is just the battles in the line of scrimmage. You know, going back, I went back and watched that week one loss to Florida State and was really underwhelmed with how Alabama played on the offensive line and defensive line. Now, you know, the question is, was that one bad afternoon or is that a sense of what's to come, you know, with how they played and their inconsistency there? So just really interested to see that. And you know, if I were to point to one matchup, you know, where I think a matchup that will go a long way in determining this game is Georgia's ability to pressure Ty Simpson. And it was an area that Florida State was really good at. You know, according to PFF, they had 29 pressures in that game. And Ty Simpson struggled when he was pressured. Now, some of that, I think, was a product of Alabama was playing from behind. I think you kind of see he was pressing a little bit. And to shout out another PFF number, they had him as 3 of 14 through the air when he was pressured in that game. So Georgia's pass rush has been a little inconsistent to start the year. They've only got 3 sacks through 3 games, and none of those are from any of the defensive linemen or outside linebackers. Each of those sacks has come from a different inside linebacker. They've got to get to him consistently. They got to get him off his mark, make him uncomfortable, because I think you've seen in the past two games Alabama's played, UL Monroe and Wisconsin had a lot of time and just absolutely dissected defenses. And, you know, looking at it from the Alabama perspective, I think that they're going to put their wide receivers out there and they're going to try to test this Georgia secondary. I think that it's as simple as saying that, you know, they showed against Tennessee that they're susceptible to giving up big plays. And I think that Alabama's going to make their share of explosive plays. I mean, Georgia's just got to do a good job of limiting the damage. But that's really the area when you look at it from the Alabama perspective. You know, I think that they've been a little pass happier than I think maybe some of us expected. getting Jam Miller back, which is the expectation this week, will help as far as trying to be a little more balanced. But I think you're going to see them try to give Ryan Williams, try to give Jeremy Bernard opportunities to make plays down the field. And we will see if this Georgia secondary can rise to the occasion and take a step forward after a poor performance at Tennessee a couple weeks ago.
It's Georgia and Alabama this Saturday night. The Crimson Tide in Athens taking on a top-five Georgia team. One of the biggest games of the weekend. The only problem and the only thing that's criminal here is the idea that it's on at the exact same time as Oregon and Penn State, which is a top-10 matchup out of the Big Ten. But plenty of eyes and ears will be on Alabama and Georgia this weekend. Dogs favored by 3.5 as this game inches closer. Jordan, before we let you go, my friend, the SEC officially announced last night that every team has three permanent opponents plus the upcoming schedules for the next several years. How did you see that play out for Georgia and what the fans are kind of feeling like with those permanent opponents for the Dogs?
Yes, staying with the permanent opponents, I don't think there was necessarily a surprise. And given the options and given what could have potentially played out, I think that Georgia really lucked out as far as what they got in terms of the history and in terms of teams that Georgia's used to playing. Keeping Auburn and Florida, I thought those were two no-brainers. Those were the locks. It was really a question of who that third team would be. For a while, the rumors had been Kentucky, and that was sort of a product of competitive balance. But instead, Georgia gets South Carolina. And as someone who's been around this program for a long time, I'm really happy with that pick. I mean, this is a series that's been played off and on, before South Carolina joined the conference. It was played every year from 92 to 2023 when both teams were in the SEC East. And the thing for me is sort of even looking at from the South Carolina perspective, when you talk about SEC rivals, I don't know that there is a bigger one for South Carolina than Georgia. You got that border state rivalry. They played some really big games over the years, some that determine who would wind up going to the SEC title game. So I think Georgia's pretty happy with what they've got. Again, you knew that it was a lock. Georgia-Florida wasn't going anywhere, and once they decided there was going to be three permanents, you felt good about the Deep South's oldest rivalry. So I think Georgia feels pretty good about the draw there. I think that should make for some interesting matchups these next few years. And the thing that is nice, too, when you look at the last time these teams have played, compared to when we'll get to the 2026 season, no flips between home and away. Whoever was due to be the home team will be the home team in 26. So that's not always the cleanest thing to do, but I think that was a nice little bonus there that there will be no return trips between the teams.
He'll be at Sanford Stadium on Saturday night covering Georgia and Alabama. He writes for Dogs 247, and he joins us every Wednesday here at 2:30. Jordan Hill with us on the phone lines now. Man, plug it all. Tell people where they can find you, where they can find your fantastic work, and get any more information they're looking for before Georgia and Alabama coming up on Saturday.
Appreciate that. Dogs247.com, on Twitter at Jordan Davis Hill, on Twitter at Dogs247. You can go follow the Junkyard Dogcast wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be live 11 a.m. Central Time on Thursday with Bama 247's Mike Rodak. We will be previewing this game. You can watch that live on our Facebook or our YouTube, Dogs247. So busy week, but a fun week. This is kind of one of those weeks that you get into this profession for. Super excited to continue previewing this one, and cannot wait to get to Saturday night. I think it's going to be a fun night.
Man, we appreciate your time as always. We kept you a little long today, so we appreciate you hanging around and giving us all the great information on the Georgia Bulldogs. Enjoy the game this weekend. We'll talk to you again next Wednesday.
Sounds great. I appreciate you guys.
Jordan Hill, Dogs247. Check him out. Again, Dogs247.com. Again, you heard him there. He's going to do a show with our friend Mike Rodak, who we had on yesterday from Bama 247. And so check that out at Dogs247.com. We'll get to our final break in hour number one. Come back. Get to the phone lines quickly before we get into hour number two.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. Thanks to Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 for joining us, as he does every single Wednesday. Let's get to the phone lines as we wrap up hour number one. 334-321-1390. We got Big John with us. Hey, my man, what's up?
What's going on, brother? How y'all doing?
Doing good, man. I got about 60 seconds for you.
All right, I just want to say this point and let you guys talk about it and I'll get off.
Yeah, go ahead.
With everything that happened at Oklahoma with the tackles for loss, the sacks, the offensive line, false starts, the special team blunders, and being on the road, we only lost by 7 points.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm feeling pretty good about the rest of the year. You guys let me know how you feel about it. War Eagle.
Yeah, appreciate the call. A bunch of good points. And what I take away from that is all the things he talked about are things that can be fixed. I will refrain from saying easily fixed, but they can be fixed, right? False starts can be fixed. Holding penalties can be fixed. Alignment penalties can be fixed. Bad special teams decisions can be fixed. Those are things that Auburn did to themselves that Oklahoma and the officiating just simply didn't do. So I think he makes a lot of good points, and that should give Auburn fans confidence if you make the changes.
Yeah, again, it's not something that can easily be fixed, but ego aside, pride aside, and you go back and look at what is really working, then yes, it should build some sort of confidence from the standpoint of against all odds, this is what the final score ended up being. You're not at the point anymore of being okay with a 7-point loss because you went out to Norman and you had to battle against all of their talent, and just the fact that it was a 7-point game you felt okay about. You're now frustrated because of how everything went, because of the mistakes that you made and how you feel like you played a better football game through 3 quarters, if not 3.5, and it ultimately came down to you still having a chance to win the football game.
I mean, you cut your mistakes in half and you win that game.
Which is why we've talked a whole lot about with Jackson this weekend in College Station. We've talked about how he held the ball uncomfortably long in Norman. I would not be surprised if he holds the ball for an uncomfortably short amount of time in College Station. Getting the ball out as quickly as you can underneath routes galore, doing everything you can, because if that's the case, that's that pressure release valve for the run game. If you go to it.
If you go to it. And look, that's just the issues on offense. You got to stop a Texas A&M. Defensively, you have to stop an offense that scored 40-plus every game this year.
And brought back all 5 of their returning starters and Marcel Reed in year number 2, answering just about every question with his arm.
More on that as we go. Hour number 1's in the books. Stick around. We got a whole lot more coming up in hour number 2.
The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number 2 during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It is the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on what is a sunny, beautiful, and hot Wednesday afternoon here in the Auburn Opelika area. If you missed any of hour number 1, you can go back and listen to the podcast version of the show. We post the audio for you after every show on our station website at ESPNAU.com or wherever you get your podcast. In the first hour, we gave our thoughts on Stephen Stephen Pearl officially being introduced as Auburn men's basketball's new head coach. He had his press conference today. A lot of people were there, said some really good things, did Stephen. And so we are excited for that new era. And gave some of our initial thoughts on what this new look Tigers team could be with Stephen Pearl now the head coach of Auburn men's basketball. We also talked about some injury news for Auburn football as Horatio Fields, Auburn's wide receiver, the transfer from Wake Forest, is out indefinitely with a broken foot. Broke his foot yesterday in practice, according to Hugh Freeze. And so Perry Thompson is the next man up. And we talked about how that could be beneficial for Auburn if Perry is able to do what he needs to do. And then we just got off the phone with Jordan Hill of Dogs 247, getting you ready for Alabama and Georgia this weekend under the lights and Athens. All of that was in hour number one. If you missed it, check it out on our station website in the podcast center at espnau.com.
We usually use hour number two, or I guess we use it a little bit in hour number one as well, to break down on Wednesdays the upcoming opponents for the Auburn Tigers, and not necessarily diving into Auburn and Texas A&M, but kind of just talking about this A&M team as a whole. It's going to be a little bit briefer here in this first segment in hour number two, because we have Daryl Daprich, who will be joining us on the phone lines from 3:15 to 3:45, recapping the game in Norman. Any confidence lost in players or any coaches, or do you have increased confidence just based off of what we were talking about to end hour number one of, despite everything that went against you and despite everything you did to go against yourself, you still had a chance and still put yourself relatively in a decent spot to win the football game. We're also going to get his thoughts on Stephen Pearl for Auburn basketball before we move into a little bit more of a Texas A&M Auburn preview with Daryl at 3:30. But again, all of that coming up here in hour number two. He is Jacob Goins. I'm Christian Griffin. We appreciate everybody for being here with us. Phone lines open for just a few more minutes if you have any thoughts on what we've talked about so far, or any questions along the Texas A&M side of things, as that's what we're about to get to, kind of a brief breakdown. It'll be a little bit more of a deeper dive into the Aggies tomorrow. And any quick hitters at 334-784-1067. That's the text box that you can ask us any questions you would like us to ask Daryl Daprich. Again, 334-784-1067 is that text box number.
Yeah, and so as we get started in hour number two, we start to quickly look at Texas A&M. And when you look at their roster, as you have been able to do the last decade plus, they're really talented. They're really good. They've got 4 and 5 stars littered on this thing on both sides of the football. And we were telling you before going to break and before exiting hour number one, this is a team that has scored 40-plus in all three games. 42 points against UTSA, 44 points against Utah State, and 41 points on the road at Notre Dame.
Before a bye week.
And that's what I was going to say. This is also a team that has since gone into a bye week and is coming off a bye week and watched it singing Kumbaya as they watched Auburn lose to Oklahoma last week. All the cards are in favor of Texas A&M here. I think the numbers say their offense is better. I think the numbers say their defense has the potential to be better. And I think that their record says they're better. And the fact that they are coming off of an early bye week is extremely beneficial for them, because they saw every weakness that Auburn has, because Oklahoma or the refs or Auburn in general exposed that last week. And so here we are again. Auburn's on the road at a top 10 team, and everything seems to be stacked against you.
It does. And you're hoping from the Auburn standpoint, again, more on this probably tomorrow, but just with the standpoint of a loss, but still having chances to win the football game, this could be one of the best things early on to happen to Auburn, because now you can go in and rather than just doing a scouting report on another team, you can continue to do a scouting report on yourself, right? And figure out what went wrong, what went right, what we should and or shouldn't do. But again, A&M is doing the exact same thing. It all starts on the offensive side of the football with Marcel Reed, who's 58 of 99 so far on the year, right around a 59% completion percentage. Has thrown for almost 900 yards, 9 touchdowns, only 1 interception, and only 1 sack in there as well. He's also the second leading rusher on this team with 25 carries and 142 yards, averaging almost 7 yards per carry. Hasn't ran it as much this year because, A, it hasn't been as necessary, and you also have Reuben Owens and Le'Veon Moss in the backfield as well, but he's been a little bit more delicate with Mike Elko going into that sophomore year, a team that averages 480 yards of offense per game. Your leading receivers, Mario Craver, is a sophomore transfer from Mississippi State, I believe. Let me get confirmation. Yes, from Mississippi State. And then KC Concepcion is from NC State. Those are his two leading receivers by far. Craver with 20 receptions and 4 touchdowns. KC with 13 receptions, 227 yards, and 3 touchdowns. And so some of those big-time skill guys that you obviously have to pay a whole lot of attention to. And yeah, the first time that you really got to watch this offense work in sync is in South Bend against Notre Dame.
I'm confident when I say these couple of things here about this Texas A&M team in regard to what their schedule has been so far. There's nothing easy about going up to Notre Dame and beating them on their home field at night when they were ranked in the top 10. There's nothing easy about that. I don't care how good or bad you think Notre Dame is. I don't think they're a top 25 team, even though, you know, the AP poll voters think so, which is all we need. But I don't think they're a top 25 team, but they were at the time. And A&M went to their house at night and got that win. They also handled business against a really talented UTSA team and a Utah State team that scared some people already this year. But I say all that to say this. I am confident that up to this point, Auburn will be the best defense that A&M has seen so far this season. I also think that Jackson Arnold is the best quarterback that A&M has seen so far this season. I also think that Auburn's receiving corps, even with the news of Horatio Fields being out today with a broken foot out indefinitely and Perry Thompson stepping up in his place, I think collectively this is the best receiving corps that Texas A&M has seen so far this season. And I'll loop back to what I said at the beginning. I think this is the best defense that Texas A&M has seen so far this season. You know how many times Marcel Reed's been sacked this year?
Once.
One time. That's it. Auburn has a chance to get after him this weekend. Their offensive line is really good. But Auburn has a chance to dial up a few things to get after Marcel Reed. But the conversations will be eerily similar, Christian, because of what Marcel Reed can do with his legs. And you mentioned that, the fact that he is their leading rusher, the fact that their second leading rusher, to where if you don't contain him, he will take off. But this is a good Auburn team that's walking into A&M, and if they get out of their own way, they have every chance to win.
A&M's defense allows 354 yards per game. They average 4 yards allowed per rush and 6.5 yards per completion. And so all of those right around middle of the pack, or right around top 50, rather. I mean, 46th, 50th. In 57th. And so a really good defense when you're looking at it from the player perspective. I think things are a little bit skewed because of the barn burner against Notre Dame. They average 0.7 takeaways per game, which is 98th. But they give away right around 0.7 turnovers per game. And it goes back to the conversation that sounds simple, stupid, but if you're Auburn, you got to find a way to win the turnover battle on the road, whether that's by one, whether that's by two. Auburn didn't turn the ball over, not according to a true turnover statistic. You would consider the botched punt kind of a turnover, because it gave Oklahoma and John Mateer a short field to work with. Good thing they didn't capitalize on that whatsoever from that play. But it's one thing that Auburn has done really, really well, is avoid turning the football over, and with an explosive offense like Texas A&M, it's what I talked about this time last week of sometimes your best defense can be your offense. If you can keep Jackson Arnold on the field, keep Marcel Reed off the field, keep Le'Veon Moss, keep this offensive line off the field, sometimes that can be your best defense.
You look at what Notre Dame did against this A&M team before we get to break, and we're going to welcome in our guy Daryl Dappert from Locked On Auburn and the Barn here momentarily. Notre Dame ran the football 39 times against Texas A&M at their place, at Notre Dame. Jeremiah Love ran it for 23, ran it 23 times for 94 yards, which doesn't sound great, but it is still 4 yards a pop. And he had a touchdown as well. And only one of those went for more than 10 yards. Only one of those went for 16. Jadarian Price ran it 12 times for 68 yards. That's 5.5 yards per carry.
Yeah, 35 yards, 160, or 35 carries, 162 yards between the two of them.
You have an opportunity here. That number doesn't sound great. But if you pick and choose when you do it and how you do it, if you're Auburn, I mean by running the football, you have a chance to make some noise against Texas A&M. And then pick and choose when you want to drop back and throw. C.J. Carr, okay? Half the people listening wouldn't know who C.J. Carr is if I didn't tell you he's the quarterback in Notre Dame. And I'm not calling out any of our listeners. It's just the fact that it's C.J. Carr, of all people, was 20 of 32 for nearly 300 yards against that Texas A&M team. You better believe A&M knows that, and they know that Hugh Freeze knows that, and they're going to play into his ego once more and say, hey, Hugh, you want to throw the football on us? We gave up a lot of yards to Notre Dame. You want to throw the football? I bet you they'll let him.
Looking at UTSA again, the game before Notre Dame, gave up 203 rushing yards. You gave up 6.2 yards per carry. Robert Henry was their leading rusher. 16 carries, 177 yards, and 2 touchdowns. And then you go even further into the Utah State game, which they won 44-22. They threw the ball 30 times for 169 yards, and they had their main running back got injured, but still ran the ball 10 times for 50 yards. Their second rusher, 8 carries for 32 yards. And so, I mean, you have 2, 3, 4 guys that you trust running the football with the ball in their hands. You get that working, and all of a sudden you let Jackson Arnold's arm come to life as well. That's where you feel like you need to rely on, and you can see some success from the Auburn side of the field.
Let's see what Daryl Dappert thinks of Locked On Auburn in the Barn. We'll talk with him about some more football stuff later on. We'll get his thoughts on basketball and the future schedules for football as well. Double D Wednesdays coming up right after this.
This is Amber from Amber and Ian. You're listening to On the Line with Jacob Goins on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
It's one of our favorite times of the week, and we know it's one of your favorite times as well. We bring in our man, Double D, Daryl Dappert from Locked On Auburn in the Barn for Double D Wednesdays. My man, it is so good to talk to you. We appreciate you hopping back on the show with us. And, I mean, this is one of the busier weeks in Auburn athletics that I can remember in quite some time.
It really is. I mean, it's just the overlap, unbelievable. I mean, you've got football sandwiched between two, you know, top 10 opponents that you're playing on the road. And then in between that, you get the announcement of Bruce Pearl retiring and Stephen Pearl taking over. So, and then, you know, all the controversy and all the publicity surrounding the Oklahoma game. I mean, it has been a lot of Auburn on people's mouths and in the news, to be honest.
Well, there is a lot to get to, and we do want to start on the basketball side with that being the news of Monday and, of course, the news of today with Stephen Pearl being formally introduced as the new head coach of Auburn men's basketball, the changing of the guard between Bruce Pearl and to Stephen Pearl. And just to allow you to talk about Bruce for a second and what he meant to you and to this program. And I mean, everybody knows he's a legend, and Steven even said he was a Hall of Famer today. But in your words, Daryl, what Bruce Pearl did for Auburn basketball and for Auburn as a whole?
Well, it's one of those rare hires that I think everybody with whatever sports team they follow, is optimistic when a new coach gets hired in your organization, whether it's the NFL, college football, college basketball. You know, when a coach gets hired, we automatically go to, it's very rare that you go, oh, that was a horrible hire. There was a couple in Auburn history. I'm not going to say who they are. That I think people were like, what? But this is one of those rare occasions where when somebody was hired, you just knew it was going to be impactful. There was like no doubt about it. I remember getting the news that Auburn was hiring Bruce Pearl, and I'm like, they got it right. This is a home run hire. And you just felt like, you know, it was going to be – I think Alabama fans felt that way when they hired Saban. There are a few hires that you just – they're no-brainers. And this was one of those. And, you know, obviously he had the success at Tennessee. Auburn was kind of sailing under a lucky star because of the no-show clause. They were able to get him. I think it was very fortunate because I think there would have been a lot of other schools that would have been in line in front of Auburn to get him. And with Auburn's basketball reputation at the time, I think Auburn would have lost out. So it really, really worked out. And I would say that other than Pat Dye and probably Shug Jordan, this was the most impactful Auburn hire of a coach, period. I mean, you know, Auburn's had some great coaches. I get it. But as far as the impact that it had, not because – those two men I mentioned besides Bruce transcended their sports. They were impactful for Auburn University as a whole,
right,
not just Auburn football. And Bruce Pearl, his hire impacted the university much more. It went beyond just basketball. What an ambassador. And so, yeah, he absolutely had the impact on a school that great coaches can elevate, that it goes beyond your sport. And I think that's exactly what Bruce Pearl has, and he belongs on the Mount Rushmore of Auburn coaches.
And I think Stephen gave him his flowers today when he was, again, formally introduced as the new head coach of Auburn men's basketball. And I've called it the worst-kept secret the last two or three years within Auburn basketball.
Yeah.
This wasn't a surprise, Darryl, that Bruce Pearl was retiring to give Stephen the reins, but I think the timing was a little shocking with BP hanging it up, and we knew that day was going to come. What are your thoughts and kind of your initial feelings on Stephen Pearl now being the next head men's basketball coach?
Kind of felt like the worst kept secret in college basketball. A lot of people hinting at it, people that I trust, people that I value their opinion, kind of alluding to it. I think one of the things that really became evident is after, I believe, May, there's some events, ambush events, events at Lake Martin, other things. And Stephen Pearl was the one that was sent out there to represent Auburn's program. He was the one that was kind of, I mean, it wasn't Bruce, it was Stephen. I mean, you'd have to be naive to not think this wasn't in the works for a long time. Now, I get Bruce Pearl said he really didn't decide until last month, but I think that's semantics. I really believe that Bruce Pearl has known for a few months that he wasn't going to come back and coach and that Stephen Pearl was going to be the guy. And I believe John Cohen knew that as well. Nothing wrong with that. You have to prepare. You have to plan. You don't want to leave your program in a state of flux. So I think that, you know, this is, again, you just had to read the tea leaves, and you could see this was coming when Stephen Pearl was kind of becoming the face of the program the last 3 or 4 months when it came to events. The second thing is, oftentimes in politics, people throw around the term shadow administration. And y'all relax, take a deep breath. I'm not talking politics. I'm making a reference. Anytime I'm talking Bruce Pearl in politics, I just heard you guys on the other line absolutely tighten up.
That was about the reaction when Steven said he was not going to be on X as much as Bruce Pearl, and they gave him a round of applause for it.
Exactly. But there's a term in politics where they call it like shadow administration, where there's a figurehead, and then there's someone behind the scenes really making all the decisions, doing everything as far as policies, procedures. I have been told that for a while now that Bruce Pearl obviously had final say in game plan and what players, but that Stephen Pearl was like responsible for, hey, let's get this guy in the portal. Let me go scout this guy. let me come up with the defensive game plan or the offensive sets we're going to run. But he was doing a lot of the on-court stuff, probably by design, for a while now. And Bruce doing the off-the-court stuff, drawing players in, that kind of thing. So I feel really comfortable with the state of the basketball program, the hands that it's in. I think Stephen Pearl, look, in this day and age of NIL and having to re-recruit players every 2 or 3 months and having to deal with the Chad Baker Mazzaras, it's a young man's game. I'm sorry. It's different. It is different than it was 10 years ago. And you look at guys like Roy Williams.
Yeah.
You look at guys like Mike Krzyzewski. You look at Tony Bennett, who's a fairly young dude.
Jay Wright.
Not the old dude. Not the old guy that's saying, I left my heart in San Francisco, but the coach. Some of the people out there will like that joke and get the reference. You newbies will not. But anyway, you know that he is young and energetic and can relate. And so the timing is pretty good because of the era we're in college basketball.
And I think a lot of people were impressed by Stephen today. I think they were impressed by his opening remarks and his willingness to talk about the NIL and the transfer portal and what he'll be and what he'll do as the next head coach of the Auburn men's basketball program. We're talking with Daryl Daprich of Locked On Auburn and the Barn. He's with us every Wednesday. Going to take an early break and come back because as much fun as basketball is, we got a lot of football things to get to. Daryl's thoughts on Oklahoma, his quick thoughts on A&M, plus the permanent opponents for Auburn. We hit all of that and more when we come back here with 30 more minutes on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
Way through hour number two. You've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm Jacob Goins. Across from me is Christian Griffin. We got our guy, Double D, Daryl Daprich from Locked On Auburn in the Barn with us on the phone lines now. My man, I know you've been busy, and you guys have been talking Oklahoma, and that's where we go now. And don't want to relish in it too much longer because in the SEC, you don't have time to do that, right? You don't have time to sit around and feel sorry for yourself because you got to get ready for another big game. But I'm sure you've calmed down by this point, right? You're fine with how the game went against Oklahoma.
Let me say something real quick before we get into that, because it is relative to what, you know, this week I've seen a lot of comments on social media over the last couple of days about, you know, what a week for Auburn. You know, Auburn, so tough being an Auburn fan. The Oklahoma debacle, the Bruce Pearl retiring, you know, Horatio Fields breaking his foot. But I think we'd be remiss if we didn't realize that all that stuff, when we think it's so important and we think that there's such a value to that, suffers and pales in comparison to what happened with Rudy Johnson. Mm. And I think we need to just take, you know, maybe take a pause and understand from a priority standpoint, we think it's bad because of the teams we root for and because of the breaks that we get with some of our teams and all that. And it kind of put it in a little bit of perspective. You know, for me, when I saw that news. So I know a lot of the people out there that listen to your show of a certain age remember him, what a great running back he was, his teammates just completely praise him as a person. And I just think from a priority standpoint, you know, it kind of helps get priorities straight when we're sitting here moaning and complaining about what might have happened during a particular week in Auburn athletics.
No, I totally agree, and I think the news was very sad for so many Auburn fans and football fans, right, with his career after the Plains as well. And so you're right in what those reasons may be, and it really does put everything, life really, into perspective on what matters and what you should focus on and put your energy towards and your focus on and things like that. And so yeah. I appreciate you saying that, Daryl.
But I'll pivot to Oklahoma. So I think one of the narratives that I was very, very much stuck on and will not turn loose from, that I feel very passionate about and convicted about that game, is there were two alternative storylines going on at that time that Auburn had to overcome to win the game. I think it's very difficult to go on the road and beat a top 10 team and get the kind of officiating that Auburn got. You know, that's a fact. I don't care who wants to sugarcoat it, who wants to justify it, who wants to have their head in the sand. It was tainted. And I'll never say officiating cost somebody a game or they lost because of officiating, but I will say when it makes an impact in a game and has an impact, and it absolutely 100% did, with point swings and all that kind of thing, and the ineptitude. And then the other thing that was going on, which is something you can control, worrying about the things you can control, is the self-inflicted stuff that Auburn had going on, the penalties, the wide-open missed touchdown passes, missed field goal again, horrible snap on a punt, fielding a punt inside the four. So, guys, think about this. It's hard enough to overcome one of those scenarios and win on the road. Auburn had to overcome both and still only lost by a touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would do. That's how I would focus on this particular week of preparation. I'd say wash off the other. Don't wash off the crap you did that cost us the football game because they were self-inflicted and you're the reason and you're to blame for that. Wash off the stuff you can't control, which is the officiating. But let's clean up the stuff that we were responsible for, that even though we got absolutely screwed on the officiating, if we would have done this other stuff, we still could have won the game. And that is what's frustrating, but that behind that could be some sort of message of hope and encouragement and say, look, guys, come on, number 10 team in the country on the road, horrible officiating, national media knows it. You do all these things wrong to yourself, and you're still in a position to win the game with 3 minutes left to go? I mean, that's what you build upon, and that's what you take into A&M on Saturday.
Daryl, how much confidence does it bring you overall? It's something we've talked about all week of how these things that you're alluding to are all fixable, but not easily fixable. So many things still have to go right for Auburn, whether that's the ego or the pride being put aside, whether that's going back to the running game, doing things that you don't feel like you have to do, or doing things like continuing to run the football even if it doesn't work in the first half. How much confidence does it give you knowing that they're fixable, yet with this coaching staff, it's been things that we've kind of talked about for 2 or 3 years and hoping you don't go back to that conversation?
You can't worry about the stuff that other teams take away. Like, for instance, if Texas A&M's defensive line was so dominant that they're completely whipping your offense, you can't – there's nothing you can do about that except try do the very best you can with schemes and mass protection and stuff like that. You can't control the fact that, you know, Mateer may have escaped pressure and found a guy downfield. Whatever. There are certain things you can't control. There are things like fielding the punt and, you know, the penalties, the false start penalties, the things you can take care of that are the smaller things, the fundamentals, you worry about that. If Oklahoma took away the run and you couldn't run it, I get it. I'm still a little bit perplexed that Cobb had 6 carries for 61 yards and didn't get more touches. But it is what it is, and when it's all said and done, again, Auburn put themselves in a position to win the game, overcoming obstacle over obstacle. I think we are all a little snake bit from losing the same way over and over again. Auburn lost some games last year because they couldn't kick field goals. They turned the ball over. That's the only difference with this year that I have to give them credit. They're not giving the ball to the other team. But penalties, not getting off the field third and long defensively, those bugaboos that were self-inflicted last year, poor special teams. Guys, how many times does Auburn get called for a hold or a block in the back on a kickoff return?
Everyone.
We went crazy about it last year.
Every single
one. Happening again this year.
Yeah. So are you in the same boat as we are, Daryl? Just quit returning kicks and punts altogether. Just let them kick it wherever they want to and take it where they give it to you?
They don't do it so much on the punts. It's more the kickoffs.
Well, we don't
the
catch
problem
punts.
With that, you know, I agree with that notion, except that you saw Pleasant take one back 98 yards against Baylor.
Yeah.
You'd hate to kind of take that, you know, tool out of the tool belt. So, you know, that's, I don't know. I would just say this is how I would handle it. If you don't, if I put you on special teams and you keep blocking in the back or you hold, you ain't going back onto the field, period. End of story. If I've got to put starters in on special teams to keep that stuff from happening, then that's what's going to happen. You change personnel. It's the only thing you can do if it keeps happening.
Well, with what you were just talking about and kind of the general conversation here as we're transitioning out of the Oklahoma game and into a preview of Texas A&M with our guy Daryl Daprich of Locked On Auburn in the Barn, I'll just be honest with you. I don't have confidence in Hugh Freeze or this coaching staff to make the proper adjustments necessary to not beat themselves in a football game because we've yet to see it. We've yet to see it. And so until I do, I'm not going to buy into it. And it's a tall task to ask them to do that on the road again in the SEC, Daryl, this time against another top 10 team in Texas A&M.
I get that mindset. I really do. It's one of those situations where until I see it, I won't believe it.
Yeah.
It's got to be done. It just has to happen that one time. And then, you know, you get over the hump. And Auburn has to, I mean, you know, let's be honest. Hugh Freeze's biggest win on the road since he's been at Auburn is at Baylor. His biggest conference win on the road is probably Arkansas 2 years ago. So there's not that signature win yet. So I agree with you that until it happens, you're skeptical that it'll happen.
And so you look ahead to what this weekend is, Auburn and Texas A&M. I'm sure you've looked at this A&M team a little bit.
I got some nugs for you guys.
Oh, I can't wait. Is it a 4-count, 8-count, 12-piece? What kind of nugget you got for us, Daryl?
We'll probably go 4-count because it's 4 bullet points.
Oh, I like it. Okay, lay it on us, my friend. It's the number 8 ranked team in the country.
Yeah, so every year when Auburn either plays A&M in football or basketball, I'm a guest of Texas Ags Radio, a gentleman named David Nuno, who does a really, really good job.
Great friend of ours,
and
yep.
So, yes, and so he has me on, and before I go on his show, we exchange information. He'll tell me some 4 or 5 things that the media may not be reporting about A&M, and he'll ask me questions about Auburn. Nothing that's proprietary or I'm at practice and I see this, nothing like that. But there were a couple things. I asked him first and foremost to describe to me what he considered to be, you know, the Achilles heel of the Texas A&M defense. And he said right now it's probably stopping the run, and it's their secondary, which I thought was pretty interesting. That resonated that Auburn should be able to get back on the ground this Saturday. I asked him about Marcel Reed, and he said that a lot of the people around A&M, you know, don't blame him for things that have happened in the past that the defense has let A&M down, but they still feel like to get to that next level, he needs to be a better downfield passer, that he does not excel at throwing the ball downfield. That needs to improve. But if obviously his legs are dynamic and they think that he doesn't get as much credit as a guy like Lagway, and they feel like all the tools are there as well. And then I asked him point blank, I said, you know, what is the thought process on stopping Jackson Arnold? And he said A&M's going to spy him, and they're going to make him beat him with his arm. They're going to take away his legs and make him beat him with his arm. So all those things tell me that if your secondary is struggling, okay, you want him to beat you with your arm. You're not really good at stopping the run, allegedly, but you're trying to take away the run. Auburn could have a similar game plan or a similar footprint to what they did against Baylor, and I think they could be pretty successful. Now, Baylor was very explosive offensively, but Auburn did a really good job of making them one-dimensional. If A&M can run it at all with Moss and Reed goes off, it's going to be a shootout. It's going to remind me of that game of 2013. I think Auburn's defense is better this year than it was in 2013. But it's just one of those situations where I think the offenses could kind of just even you know, cancel each other out. And whoever plays best on the defensive side of the ball maybe comes away with this win.
Daryl, hitting all the bullet points with football in this last segment. Appreciate your time. As always, Auburn now has their permanent opponents from 2026 into 2029. You feel like Alabama and Georgia were givens. That first game played in 1893, Georgia 1892. Vanderbilt is Auburn's third. That first game in 1893. Was that the game you were expecting, or the team, rather, that you were expecting? And then what are your thoughts on those three compared to everywhere else in the SEC, or possibly Auburn's SEC slate from 26 to 29?
Well, I think it was another example of the worst kept secret, even before Chris Lowe leaked it yesterday. We've been hearing Vanderbilt for months. And the reason why we've been hearing Vanderbilt is there's this perception that they are the perennial doormat of the SEC, and that hasn't been the case last year or so far this year. That may go back to the norm when Clark Lee gets a better job and Pavia leaves. So the thought process is you're playing Georgia and Alabama, two of the most, you know, potent programs in the last 10 years in the conference, which is a lot, a big ask for Auburn to do. And so let's go ahead and throw them a bone and give them Vanderbilt. Well, you know, right now, that's not throwing them a bone. You'd rather get Mississippi State or Kentucky or someone like that, or Arkansas. Mm-hmm. But I think that's a good – I think Auburn has a really, really big presence in Nashville. They travel really, really well to Nashville. There's a great Auburn club up in Nashville. So that's a good place to go, you know, watch a game. And so I like that. I like Vanderbilt being the third common opponent. Because, like you said, you know you're going to get Alabama and Georgia. That 2026 schedule, though,
whew,
and the road games. I mean, even playing LSU and Florida at home. Because, guys, I think Florida, we're thinking of Florida right now. Florida's a sleeping giant. Mm-hmm. We've known in the past they get the right coach, and they're as good as Georgia.
It's on. Yeah.
You know, when Spurrier was there and had it going, and Urban Meyer, and then even Mullen, the COVID year, beat Kirby Smart's tail, won the East, and played Alabama off their feet in the SEC title game with Trask. So they are dangerous. They get the right guy, and they are dangerous. Fertile recruiting ground, great fan support, good NIL. Florida is a sleeping giant, and the right coach, if a Lane Kiffin or a Dabo Sweeney was to go to Florida.
Stop. Stop, Daryl. We're not speaking that into existence. Nope.
I think I'd rather have Florida good than Ole Miss. I will tell you that much.
That's fair.
I have grown from a
pride perspective.
Vitriol for Ole Miss now that I used to not have, and that has a lot to do with. Never mind.
Looking at that 2026 slate, Auburn has Arkansas, Florida, LSU, and Vandy at home. You go to Alabama, go to Georgia, go to Mississippi State, go to Ole Miss, and go to Tennessee. You also have Baylor, Southern Miss, and Jacksonville State in there. Presumably all at home. Baylor confirmed at home. But, yeah, you mentioned that 2026 road slate. Alabama, Georgia, State, Ole Miss, and Tennessee. Oh, boy.
And Tennessee's got it going.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, if let's just say there was the old East-West format, would you not agree that Tennessee would probably be the biggest, even though Georgia beat them, the biggest threat to Georgia in the East would be Tennessee? I mean, they were in the college football playoff last year.
Yeah, easily.
So, and then you've got them on the road, and we know that Neyland Stadium's very difficult to win. Although I think Auburn's won there the last couple times. So, I don't know. I mean, I just think it's a situation where it is what it is. You're not going to get away from a brutal schedule going forward now playing in the SEC. When you go to a 9-game schedule and you're required to play another Power 4 team as well, no matter who it is, it's going to be a gauntlet. And that's why I predict that the college football playoff will expand to 16 teams. So that playing these types of schedules, three losses still keeps you in it. And I have one more question for you guys. I thought about this Me and Zach talked about this on our live last night. I want to get y'all's take real quick.
Okay.
You know how Commissioner Sankey came out and said, when this nine-game schedule, you have to play a non-conference Power Four or Notre Dame every year. My idea and my suggestion is add one more caveat to that and say, or a service academy.
Oh.
Because, look, our best and brightest, for our nation, these service academies, they don't get opportunities to go play big money games. How fun would it be for people that are Auburn folks to go to West Point and watch a football game, or Annapolis and watch a football game? You know, the whole pageantry of these service academies. And these service academies deserve some money games and deserve some recognition and exposure. So if I'm the SEC, I add that to the list of options that you have to do as far as a non-conference game.
That'd be awesome too, as a home at home, where you mentioned you'd be able to go to one of those places, but then be able to welcome them to your campus and still give them the same amount of appreciation, and it would mean a little bit more because they're not on their home campus.
You'd have to put them in a rotation, though. Just obviously, there's not enough to go around for all 16 teams. But yeah, put them in a rotation. Yeah, that would be. I love that idea, Daryl. Though that's too good of an idea, my friend, which means they won't do it. So don't get your hopes up.
Remind me at SEC Media Days next year in case I lose my mind and forget. You guys are kind of like there as my sons to prop me up. Hey, Dap, ask the question, and I believe I will, to Greg Sankey right there.
I love
and
that.
And if I look to my left and I look to my right and you guys are hiding under the table, I'm going to be very disappointed.
I'll stand up with you.
Oh, come on, Dad. Right. You know better Let than that. Go. You know better.
We'll hold both arms, Dad.
Thank you.
Daryl, we appreciate you, my friend. Plug everything. Tell people where they can find you really quickly. I know we've kept you long today, but we really appreciate your time.
Wednesdays and Fridays, Locked on Auburn, wherever you get your podcasts, and on YouTube. Sunday nights, 8 o'clock, we have this thing called the Barncast. Kyle Rush, Zach, and I, same scenario, wherever you get your podcast and on YouTube.
Man, we appreciate you, your time, your friendship, and everything you bring for us, my friend. We are looking forward to our conversation this time next week.
Thanks, guys. Have a great week.
Daryl Dappert, Locked on Auburn in the Barn. Check him out, again, wherever you get your podcasts for them. You can find him on social media as well. We need to get to our final break here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. We'll wrap up the show right after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. Online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Winding down here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Been an awesome show today, man. If you've missed any of it, go back and catch it with the podcast. You'll find it on our station website at ESPNAU.com or wherever you get your podcast. We'll make sure to get that up for you today. We just got off the phone with Daryl Dappert of Locked on Auburn in the Barn. He's with us for 30 minutes every single Wednesday. So we talked to him. He gave his thoughts on Oklahoma, Texas A&M, basketball, the unfortunate passing of Rudy Johnson as well. And so lots of good stuff there with Daryl. And then Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 in hour number one. We talked some basketball today and began talking a little Texas A&M. And we'll do it more tomorrow. We'll talk A&M. We'll talk NFL. We'll talk schedules. We'll talk with Brad Law. We'll talk with Coach Keith Etheridge. We'll talk to Chris Gordy. My goodness. Tomorrow is going to be jam-packed, as Thursdays usually are. So come on back and join us 2 to 4 right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, he's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.